quiet. He just took care of things. I guess that's what dads do. That's what he's doing for his new family. Peter says it matter-of-factly, without bitterness. What about you? You miss your mom?
Sometimes, when I think about it. Suddenly I say, you know what I miss? I miss bath time. I miss when she would wash my hair. Don't you think getting your hair washed is just the best feeling? Like warm water and bubbles and fingers in your hair? It's so nice.
Yeah, it is.
Sometimes I don't think about her at all, and then sometimes I'll have a thought like, I wonder what she would think of me now. She only knew me as a little girl, and now I'm a teenager, and I wonder if she saw me on the street, would she recognize me?
Of course she would. She's your mom.
I know, but I've changed a lot. An uncomfortable look has crossed his face, and I can tell he's regretting complaining about his dad, because at least his dad is still alive. And then, because Peter's looking at me like he feels sorry for me, I straighten up and say in a haughty voice, I'm very mature, you know. He's grinning now.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes. I'm very refined, Peter. When Peter drops me off, right before I get out of the car, he says,
I can tell my mom liked you.
This makes me feel good inside. It's always been really important to me that other people's moms like me. It was my favorite part of going over to Genevieve's house, hanging out with her mom. Wendy was so stylish. She used to wear a silky blouse and nice pants and a statement necklace just for sitting around the house. Perfect hair, always smooth and flat. Genevieve has that same good hair, but she doesn't have her mom's perfect straight nose. Hers has a little bump on the bridge that I think only adds to her appeal.
By the way, you definitely don't wear more makeup than Jen. She was always getting bronzer on my white shirts.
For someone who's over Genevieve, he sure does talk about her a lot. Though it's not just him. I was thinking about her too. Even when she's not here, she's here. That girl has some kind of reach. Chapter 41. During chemistry, Peter writes me a note that says, Can I come over tonight to study for the test? I write back, I don't remember study sessions being in the contract. After he reads it, he turns around and gives me a wounded look. I mouth, I'm kidding. At dinner, I announce that Peter's coming over to study and we're going to need the kitchen, and my dad raises his eyebrows.
Leave the door open, he jokes.
We don't even have a door to the kitchen. Daddy, I groan, and Kitty groans with me. Casually, he asks,
Is Peter your boyfriend?
Something like that, I say. After we eat and Kitty and I do the dishes, I set up the kitchen like a study room. My textbook and notes are stacked up in the center of the table with a row of highlighters in blue, yellow, and pink, a bowl of microwave kettle corn, and a plate of peanut butter brownies I baked this afternoon. I let Kitty have two, but that's it. He said he'd be over around 8. At first, I think he's just late as usual, but the minutes tick by and I realize he's not coming. I text him once, but he doesn't text back. Kitty comes down between commercial breaks, sniffing around for another brownie, which I give her. Is Peter not coming? She asks. I pretend I'm so absorbed in my studying I don't hear. Around 10, he sends a text that says, Sorry, something came up. I can't come over tonight. He doesn't say where he is or what he's doing, but I already know. He's with Genevieve. At lunch, he was distracted. He kept texting on his phone, and then later in the day, I saw them outside the girls' locker room. They didn't see me, but I saw them. They were just talking, but with Genevieve, it's never just anything. She put her hand on his arm. He brushed her hair out of her eyes. I may only be a fake girlfriend, but that's not nothing. I keep studying, but it's hard to concentrate when your feelings are hurt. I tell myself it's just because I went to the trouble of baking brownies and cleaning up the downstairs. I mean, it's rude to just not show up somewhere. Does he not have manners? How would he like it if I did that? And really, what's the whole point of this charade if he's just going to keep going back to her anyway? What's even in it for me anymore? Things are better with Josh and me, practically normal. If I wanted to, I could just call the whole thing off. The next morning, I wake up still mad. I call Josh to ask him for a ride to school. For a second, I worry he might not pick up. It's been so long since we hung out. But he does, and he says no problem. Let's see how Peter likes it when he comes to my house to pick me up, and I'm not there. Halfway to school, I start to feel uneasy. Maybe Peter had a legitimate reason for not coming over. Maybe he wasn't with Genevieve, and now I've just done a very petty thing out of spite. Josh is looking at me with suspicious eyes. What's wrong? Nothing. He doesn't believe me, I can tell.
Did you and Kavinsky have a fight?
No. Josh sighs and says,
Just be careful.
He says it in a patronizing older brother kind of way that makes me want to scream.
I don't want to see you hurt by that guy.
Josh, he won't hurt me. Jeez.
He's a douche. I'm sorry, but he is. All the guys on the lacrosse team are. Guys like Kavinsky, they only care about one thing. As soon as they get what they want, they're bored.
Not Peter. He dated Genevieve for almost 4 years.
Just trust me. You haven't had much experience with guys, Lara Jean.
Quietly, I ask, how would you know? Josh gives me an, oh, come on, look.
Because I know you.
Not as well as you think. We're quiet the rest of the way. It won't be that big of a deal. Peter will stop by my house, see that I'm not there, and then he'll leave. Big deal, so he had to go 5 minutes out of his way. I waited for him last night for 2 friggin' hours. When we get to school, Josh heads for the senior hall, and I go straight to the junior hall. I keep sneaking peeks down the hallway at Peter's locker, but he doesn't arrive. I wait at my locker until the bell rings, and he still doesn't come. I run off to first period, my backpack banging against my back as I go. Mr. Schuller is taking attendance, when I look up and see Peter standing in the doorway glaring at me. He gestures at me to come out. I gulp and quickly look down at my notebook and pretend like I didn't see him. But then he hisses my name, and I know I have to talk to him. Shakily, I raise my hand. Mr. Schuller, can I go to the bathroom?
You should have gone before class, he grumbles, but he waves me on.
I hurry out to the hallway and pull Peter away from the door so Mr. Schuller can't see.
Where were you this morning? Peter demands.
I cross my arms and try to stand tall.
It's hard because I'm so short and he really is tall.
You're one to talk. Peter huffs.
At least I texted you. I called you like 17 times. Why is your phone off?
You know we're not allowed to have our phones on at school. He huffs.
Lara Jean, I waited in front of your house for 20 minutes.
Yikes. Well, I'm sorry.
How did you get to school? Sanderson?
Yes. Peter exhales.
Listen, if you were pissed off I couldn't come over last night, you should have just called and said so instead of the shit you pulled this morning.
In a small voice, I say, Well, what about that shit you pulled last night?
A smile tugs at the corners of his mouth. Did you just say shit? It sounds really funny coming out of your mouth.
I ignore that. So, where were you? Were you with Genevieve? I don't ask what I really want to know, which is, did you guys get back together? He hesitates and then says,
She needed me.
I can't even look at him. Why is he such a dummy? Why does she have such a hold on him? Is it just the amount of time they've been together? Is it the sex? I don't understand. It's disappointing how little self-control boys have. Peter, if you're just going to go running every time she beckons, I don't see a point to any of this.
Covey, come on. I said I was sorry. Don't be pissed.
You never said you were sorry, I say. When did you say you were sorry?
Chastened, he says. Sorry.
I don't want you to go to Genevieve's anymore. How do you think that makes me look to her? Peter looks at me steadily.
I can't not be there for Jen, so don't ask me to.
But Peter,
What does she even need for you when she has a new boyfriend?
He flinches, and right away, I'm sorry I said it.
I'm sorry, I whisper.
It's fine. I don't expect you to understand it. Jen and I, we just get each other.
He doesn't know it, but when Peter talks about Genevieve, he gets a certain softness in his face. It's tenderness mixed with impatience. And something else. Love. Peter can protest all he wants, but I know he still loves her. Sighing, I ask, did you at least study for the test? Peter shakes his head and I sigh again.
You can look at my notes during lunch, I say, and I head back to my class.
It's starting to make sense to me. Why he'd go along with a scheme like this. Why he'd spend his time with someone like me. It's not so he can move on from Jen. It's so he can't. I'm just his excuse. I'm holding Genevieve's place for her. When that piece makes sense, everything else starts to. Chapter 42. Josh's parents fight a lot. I don't know if it's a normal amount of fighting because I only have one parent, but I don't remember my parents fighting that much when I had two. Our houses are close enough that I can hear them sometimes, if my window is open. The fights usually start out with something small, like Mrs. Sanderson accidentally leaving the car door open and the battery going dead, and end with something big, like how Mr. Sanderson works too much and is inherently selfish and not cut out for a family. When they fight bad, Josh comes over. When we were younger, he'd sneak out sometimes in his pajamas with his pillow, and he'd stay until his mom came looking for him. It's not something we talk about. Maybe him and Margot, but not me and him. The most he ever said about it was that sometimes he wished they'd just get divorced so it could finally be over. They never did, though. I can hear them tonight. I've heard them other nights since Margot left, but tonight sounds particularly bad. So bad I close my window. I gather up my homework and go downstairs and turn on the living room light so Josh knows he can come over if he wants. Half an hour later, there's a knock at the door. I wrap myself in a pale blue baby blanket and open it. It's Josh. He smiles at me sheepishly.
Hey, can I hang out here for a bit?
Of course you can. I leave the door open and trudge back to the living room. I call back, lock it behind you. Josh watches TV and I do my homework. I'm highlighting my way through U.S. history when Josh asks me,
are you going to try out for Arcadia?
That's the spring play. They just announced it yesterday. No, I say, switching highlighter colors. Why would I? I hate public speaking and getting up in front of people, and Josh knows it.
Duh, because it's your favorite play.
Josh changes the channel.
I think you'd be a really good Thomasina.
I smile. Thanks, but no thanks.
Why not? It could be something good to put on your college apps.
It's not like I'm going to be a theater major or anything.
It wouldn't kill you to get out of your comfort zone a little bit, he says, stretching his arms out behind his head. Take a risk. Look at Margot. She's all the way over in Scotland.
I'm not Margot.
I'm not saying you should move to the other side of the world. I know you'd never do that. Hey, what about honor council? You love judging people.
I make a face at him.
Or Model UN? I bet you'd like that. I'm just saying, your world could be bigger than just playing checkers with Kitty and riding around in Kavinsky's car.
I stop highlighting mid-sentence. Is he right? Is my world really that small? It's not like his world is so big. Josh, I begin. Then I pause because I don't know how I'm going to finish the sentence. So instead I throw my highlighter at him. It ricochets off his forehead.
Hey, you could have hit me in the eye.
And you would have deserved it.
Okay. You know I didn't mean it like that. I just mean that you should give people a chance to know you.
Josh points the remote control at me and says, if people knew you, they would love you. He sounds so matter-of-fact. Josh, you break my heart. And you're a liar. Because you know me. You know me better than almost anybody. And you don't love me.
After Josh goes back home, I tidy up the living room, lock all the doors, and turn off the lights. Then I pour myself a glass of water and head upstairs. The light is on in my bedroom, and Chris is asleep in my bed. I roll her to the side so I can fit in too. Stirring, she mumbles,
"Wanna go get hot wings?"
"It's too late to eat hot wings," I say, pulling my quilt up so it covers both of us. "You just missed Josh." Her eyes fly open.
"Joshy was here? Why?"
"No reason. I won't tell Josh's secrets, not even to Chris."
"Well, don't mention it to Kavinsky."
"He wouldn't care," I say. Chris shakes her head.
"All boys care."
"Peter's not like that. He's really confident."
"They're the ones that care the most," she says.
I'm about to ask her what she means, but before I can, she says,
"Let's go do something wild."
"Like what?" "It's a school night. I can't go anywhere, and she knows it. But I still like to hear her schemes. They're like bedtime stories."
"Like, I don't know. We could sneak into the nursing home and break out that grandma you're always talking about. What's her name again? Thunder?"
I giggle. "Stormy."
"Yeah, Stormy," she yawns.
"She seems like she knows how to have a good time. I bet she'd buy us cocktails." Stormy goes to sleep at 9 every night to get her beauty rest. Let's do it tomorrow. By tomorrow, Chris will have forgotten all about it, but it's still a nice thought. Her eyes are closed again. I poke her in the side. "Chris, wake up. Go brush your teeth." I keep a toothbrush in my bathroom drawer just for her. I painted a cursive C on it with red nail polish so it doesn't get mixed up with anybody else's toothbrush.
"Can't. I'm too tired to move."
"A second ago you wanted to break Stormy out of Bellevue, and now you're too tired to wash your face and brush your teeth?" Chris smiles but doesn't open her eyes. I turn off my bedside lamp.
"Night, Chris."
She wriggles closer to me.
"Good night."
Chapter 43. There are very limited options for Asian girls on Halloween. Like, one year I went as Velma from Scooby-Doo, but people just asked me if I was a manga character. I even wore a wig. So now I'm committed to dressing up as Asian characters exclusively. Margot never goes as a person. She is always an inanimate object or a concept of some kind. Like, last year she went as a formal apology. She wore a floor-length evening gown we found at Goodwill for $10, and she had a sign around her neck written in calligraphy which said, "I'm sorry." It won second prize in the school contest. First prize went to a Rastafarian alien. Kitty's going as a ninja, which I suppose is in line with my whole Asian costume idea. This year, I'm going as Cho Chang from Harry Potter. I've got my Ravenclaw scarf and an old black choir robe I found on eBay, plus one of my dad's ties and a wand. I'm not going to win any contests, but at least people will know what I am. I wish I never have to answer a "what are you" question ever again. I'm waiting for Peter to pick me up for school, messing with my knee highs. They won't stay up.
"Lara Jean."
Automatically, I call back,
"Josh."
It's our version of Marco Polo. Then I look up. There's Josh standing in front of his car, in a full-on Harry Potter costume, black robe, glasses, lightning mark on his forehead, wand. We both burst out laughing. Of all the random costumes? Ruefully, Josh says,
"The guys from the graphic novel club are going as different fantasy book characters. I was going to go as Drogo from Game of Thrones because, you know, I've got the upper body for it," but
I giggle, trying to picture Josh with eyeliner and a long braid and no shirt. It's a funny picture. I wouldn't exactly call Josh scrawny, but...
"Hey, quit laughing so hard," he objects. "It wasn't that funny."
He jingles his keys.
"So, do you need a ride, Cho?"
I look at my phone. Peter's 5 minutes late, as usual. Not that I can really complain, because it's a free ride to school, and I could be taking the bus. But if I go with Josh, I won't have to rush to class. I can go by my locker. I can go pee. I can get a juice at the vending machine. But he's probably already nearly here. "Thanks, but I'm waiting for Peter." Josh nods.
"Oh, yeah, right."
He starts to climb into his car.
I shout out, "Expelliarmus!" And Josh spins around and calls back, "Finite!"
Then we grin at each other like goofs. He drives off and I hug my knees to my chest. Josh and I read Harry Potter around the same time, when I was in 6th and he was in 7th. Margot had already read them. Neither of us can read as fast as she does. It drove her crazy, waiting for us to get to the 3rd book so we could discuss. The longer I sit waiting for Peter, the more prickly I feel. I take off my robe and put it back on a few times. It's polyester, and polyester doesn't breathe or feel nice against your skin. When he drives up, I run to his car and get in without saying hello. I spread my robe over my lap like a blanket, because my kilt is short. His eyes are big.
"You look hot," he says, sounding surprised.
"What are you, an anime character?"
"No," I say, or more like snap. "I'm Cho Chang." Peter still has a blank look on his face, so I add, "From Harry Potter?"
"Oh, yeah, cool."
I look over at him. He's wearing a regular button-down and jeans. "Where's your costume?"
"Me and my boys are going to change right before the assembly. It's a better effect if we unveil at the same time."
I know he wants me to ask what his costume is, but I don't feel like talking to him. So I sit there, not saying anything and looking out the window. I keep waiting for him to ask me what's wrong, but he doesn't. He's so oblivious. I don't even think he notices I'm mad. Abruptly, I say, "I wish you weren't always late." Peter frowns.
"Geez, sorry. I was trying to get my costume together."
"Today you were trying to get your costume together, but you're late all the time."
"I'm not late all the time."
"You were late today, and yesterday, and last Thursday." I stare out the window. The autumn leaves are already falling. "If you're not going to be on time, I don't want you giving me rides anymore." I don't have to look. I can feel him glaring at me.
"Fine. That means I get 5 extra minutes of sleep, so works for me."
"Good." During the judging, Chris and I are sitting in the balcony of the theater. Chris is dressed up as Courtney Love. She's wearing a pink slip and holy knee socks and lots of smudgy eye makeup.
"You should go down there, too," I say. "I bet you'd win something."
"People at this school wouldn't even know who she is," Chris sneers, but I can tell she kind of wants to. The guys in Peter's group are all superheroes. There's Batman, Superman, Iron Man, the Incredible Hulk, all to varying degrees of effort. Peter went all out. He is, of course, Peter Parker. Who else would Kavinsky go as? His Spider-Man costume is super authentic, with yellow mylar eyes and gloved hands and bootied feet. He is a total ham up on stage. All the guys run around, capes flapping, pretend fighting each other. Peter tries to climb up a column, but Mr. Yelsnik stops him before he can get far. I cheer when his group wins for best group costume. Genevieve is Catwoman. She's wearing pleather leggings and a bustier and black cat ears. I wonder if she was in on the superhero theme, if Peter told her or if she came up with that on her own. Every guy in the auditorium goes wild when she goes on stage for best junior costume.
"What a hoe," Chris says.
She sounds almost wistful. Genevieve wins, of course. I sneak a look at Peter and he's whistling and stomping his feet with all his friends. After the assembly, I'm getting my chem book out of my locker when Peter comes over and leans his back against the locker next to mine. Through his mask, he says,
"Hey."
"Hey," I say. And then he doesn't say anything else. He just stands there. I close my locker door and spin the combination lock. "Congratulations on winning best group costume."
"That's it? That's all you're gonna say?"
"Huh?
What else am I supposed to say?"
Just then, Josh walks by with Jersey Mike, who's dressed up as a hobbit, hairy feet and all. Walking backward, Josh points his wand at me and says,
"Expelliarmus!"
Automatically, I point my wand back at him and say, "Avada Kedavra!" Josh clutches his chest like I've shot him.
"Way harsh!"
he calls out, and he disappears down the hallway. Don't you think it's weird for my supposed girlfriend to wear a couple's costume with another guy?" Peter asks me.
I roll my eyes. I'm still mad at him from this morning.
I'm sorry. I can't talk to you when you look like this. How am I supposed to have a conversation with a person in head-to-toe latex?
Peter pushes his mask up. I'm serious. How do you think it makes me look?
First of all, it wasn't planned. Second of all, nobody cares what my costume is. Who would even notice something like that?
People notice, Peter huffs. I noticed.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry that a coincidence like this would ever occur.
I really doubt it was a coincidence, Peter mutters.
What do you want me to do? Do you want me to pop over to the Halloween store during lunch and buy a red wig and be Mary Jane?
Smoothly, Peter says, could you? That'd be great.
No, I could not. You know why? Because I'm Asian, and people will just think I'm in a manga costume.
I hand him my wand. Hold this. I lean down and lift the hem of my robe so I can adjust my knee socks. Frowning, he says, I could have been someone from the book if you'd told me in advance.
Yes, well, today you'd make a really great moaning Myrtle.
Peter gives me a blank look, and disbelieving, I say,
wait a minute. Have you never read Harry Potter?
I've read the first two.
Then you should know who Moaning Myrtle is.
It was a really long time ago, Peter says. Was she one of those people in the paintings?
No. And how could you stop after Chamber of Secrets? The third one's the best out of the whole series. I mean, that's literally crazy to me.
I peer at his face.
Do you not have a soul?
Sorry if I haven't read every single Harry Potter book. Sorry I have a life and I'm not in the Final Fantasy Club or whatever that geek club is called.
I snatch my wand back from him and wave it in his face. Silencio!
Peter crosses his arms. Smirking, he says, whatever spell you just tried to cast on me, it didn't work, so I think you need to go back to Hogwarts.
He's so proud of himself for the Hogwarts reference, it's kind of endearing.
Quick like a cat, I pull down his mask, and then I put one hand over his mouth. With my other hand, I wave my wand again.
Silencio!
Peter tries to say something, but I press my hand harder.
What? What was that? I can't hear you, Peter Parker.
Peter reaches out and tickles me, and I laugh so hard I almost drop my wand. I dart away from him, but he pounces after me, pretend shooting webs at my feet. Giggling, I run away from him, further down the hall, dodging groups of people. He gives chase all the way to chem class. A teacher screams at us to slow down, and we do, but as soon as we're around the corner, I'm running again, and so is he. I'm breathless by the time I'm in my seat. He turns around and shoots a web in my direction, and I explode into giggles again, and Mr. Myers glares at me. Settle down, he says, and I nod obediently. As soon as his back is turned, I giggle into my robe. I want to still be mad at Peter, but it's just no use. Halfway through class, he sends me a note. He's drawn spiderwebs around the edges. It says, I'll be on time tomorrow. I smile as I read it. Then I put it in my backpack, in my French textbook, so the page won't crease or crumble. I want to keep it so when this is over, I can have something to look at and remember what it was like to be Peter Kavinsky's girlfriend, even if it was all just pretend. Chapter 44. When we pull up in my driveway, Kitty runs out of the house and over to the car.
Spider-Man! She shrieks.
She's still in her ninja costume, though she's taken the mask off.
Are you coming inside?
I glance at Peter. He can't. He has to go condition. Peter spends an hour a day conditioning for lacrosse. He's very dedicated to it.
Condition?
Kitty repeats, and I know she's imagining Peter washing his hair. I can hang out for a little bit, Peter says, turning the engine off.
Let's show him the dance!
Kitty, no. The dance is something Margot and I made up when we were bored one night a few summers ago at the beach. Let's just say neither of us is particularly talented at choreography.
Peter's eyes light up. He'll take any opportunity for a laugh,
especially at my expense.
I want to see the dance.
Forget about it, I tell him. We're in the living room. Each of us has our own couch or armchair. I poured us iced teas and put out a bowl of potato chips, which we've already finished.
Come on, he pouts. Show me the dance, please. Please show me the dance.
That's not going to work on me, Peter.
What's not going to work?
I wave my hand in his handsome boy face.
That. I'm immune to your charms, remember?
Peter lifts his eyebrows like I've dared him.
Is that a challenge? 'Cause I'm warning you, you do not want to step into the ring with me. I'll crush you, Covey.
He doesn't take his eyes off mine for several long seconds, and I can feel my smile fade and my cheeks heat up.
Come on, Lara Jean!
I blink. Kitty, I'd forgotten she was still in the room. I scramble to my feet.
Cue up the music. Peter just challenged us to a dance-off.
Kitty squeals and runs to turn on the speakers. I push back the coffee table. We take our places in front of the fireplace, backs turned, heads down, hands clasped behind our backs. When the bass kicks in, we jump and turn around, hip thrust, swivel, then move into our knee slides, then the running man, then this move Margot made up called the treadmill. The music stops, and Kitty and I freeze in our crunking positions. Then it starts up again, and we're doing the butterfly, then back into the knee slides. I forget what the next move is, so I sneak a peek at Kitty, who's shimmying and clapping her hands. Oh, yeah. Our big finish is splits, with our arms crossed for emphasis. Peter's bowled over, laughing his head off. He claps and claps and stomps his feet. When it's over, I try to catch my breath and manage to say, "Okay, you're up, Kavinsky."
"I can't," Peter gasps. "How do I follow a performance like that? Kitty, will you teach me that pop and lock move?"
Kitty gets shy all of a sudden. She sits on her hands and looks at him through her lashes and shakes her head.
"Please, please," he asks.
Kitty finally caves in. I think she just wanted to make him work for it. I watch them dance all afternoon, my little sister the ninja and my pretend boyfriend, Spider-Man. First I laugh, but then a worrying thought comes out of nowhere. I can't let Kitty get too attached to Peter. This is temporary. The way Kitty looks at him so adoringly, like he's her hero. When Peter has to leave, I walk him out to his car. Before he gets in, I say, "I don't think you should come over anymore. It's confusing to Kitty." Frowning, he says,
"How is it confusing to Kitty?"
Because when our thing is over, she's going to miss you.
"I'll still see the kid around."
Peter pokes me in the stomach.
"I want joint custody."
All I can think of is how patient he was with her, how sweet. Impulsively, I get up on my tiptoes and kiss him on the cheek, and he jerks back in surprise.
"What was that for?"
My cheeks feel scalded. I say, "For being so nice to Kitty." Then I wave goodbye and run into the house. Chapter 45. If I don't buy groceries today, it's scrambled eggs for dinner tonight. Again. Margot's car is fixed and sitting in the driveway, where it's been sitting for the past few weeks. I could go to the store if I wanted to. I do want to, but I don't want to drive. If I was a nervous driver before, the accident has only made me worse. What business do I have behind the wheel of a car? What if I hurt someone? What if I hurt Kitty? They shouldn't just give out driver's license so easily. I mean, a car is a really dangerous thing. It's practically a weapon. But the store is less than 10 minutes away. It's not like I'd be getting on the highway. And I really, really don't want to eat scrambled eggs for dinner tonight. Besides, if Peter and Genevieve are getting back together, he won't be giving me rides anymore. I've got to learn how to do for myself. I can't depend on other people to help me. "We're going to the store, Kitty," I say. She's lying down in front of the TV, propped up on her elbows. Her body looks so long. It's getting longer every day. Pretty soon, she'll be taller than me. Kitty doesn't look away from the TV.
I don't want to come. I want to watch my shows.
If you come, I'll let you pick out an ice cream.
Kitty gets to her feet. On the drive there, I'm going so slow that Kitty keeps telling me the speed limit.
They give tickets for going under the limit, too, you know.
Who told you that?
No one. I just know it. I bet I'm going to be a better driver than you, Lara Jean.
I grip the steering wheel tighter.
I bet you are.
Brat.
I bet when Kitty starts driving, she's going to be a speed demon without the slightest concern for those around her. But she'll still probably be better at it than me. A reckless driver is better than a scared one. Ask anybody.
I'm not scared of things like you are.
I adjust my rearview mirror.
You sure are proud of yourself.
I'm just saying.
Is there a car coming? Can I switch lanes?
Kitty turns her head.
You can go, but hurry.
Like, how much time do I have?
It's already too late. Wait, now you can go. Go!
I jerk into the left lane and look in my rear view.
Good job, Kitty. You just keep being my second pair of eyes.
As we push the cart around the store, I'm thinking about the drive home and having to get behind the wheel again. My heart still races even as I'm trying to decide if we should have zucchini or green beans with dinner. By the time we're in the dairy aisle, Kitty's whining.
Can you hurry? I don't want to miss my next show.
To appease her, I say, go pick out an ice cream. And Kitty heads off toward the frozen food aisle. The way home, I stay in the right lane for blocks and blocks so I don't have to switch lanes. The car in front of me is an old lady, and she's moving at a snail's pace, which suits me just fine. Kitty begs me to switch lanes, but I just ignore her and keep doing what I'm doing, nice and easy. My hands are gripping the steering wheel so tightly my knuckles are white.
The ice cream's going to be all melted by the time we get home, Kitty gripes. And I've missed every single one of my shows. Can you please go to the fast lane?
Kitty, I screech,
will you just let me drive? Then drive already!
I lean across the console to cuff her upside the head, and she scoots closer to the window so I can't reach her.
Can't touch me, she says gleefully.
Quit playing around and be my eyes, I say.
A car is coming up on my right, zooming off a highway exit. He's going to have to merge into my lane soon. Lightning fast, I look over my shoulder for my blind spot to see if I can switch lanes. Every time I have to take my eyes away from the road, even for a second, I feel so much panic in my chest. But I don't have a choice. I just hold my breath and I switch over to the left lane. Nothing bad happens. I exhale. My heart races the whole way home. But we make it. No accidents, and nobody honking their horn at me, and that's the important thing. And the ice cream is fine, only a little melted on top. It will get easier each time, I think. I hope. I just have to keep trying. I can't stand the thought of Kitty being scornful of me. I'm her big sister. I have to be someone she looks up to, the way I look up to Margot. How can Kitty look up to me if I'm weak? That night, I pack Kitty's and my lunches. I make what Mommy used to make us sometimes when we went on picnics at the winery in Keswick. I dice up a carrot and an onion and fry it with sesame oil and a little vinegar. Then I mix in sushi rice. When it's cooked, I scoop pats of rice into tofu skins. They're like rice balls in little purses. I don't have an exact recipe to follow, but it tastes right enough. When I'm finished, I get on a ladder and search for the bento boxes Mommy used to put them in. I finally find them in the back of the Tupperware cabinet. I don't know if Kitty will remember eating these rice balls, but I hope that her heart will. Chapter 46. At the lunch table, Peter and his friends can't get enough of the rice balls. I only get to eat three.
These are so good! Peter keeps saying.
When he reaches for the last one, he stops short and quickly looks up at me to see if I noticed.
You can have it, I say. I know what he's thinking of, the last piece of pizza.
No, it's all right. I'm good.
Have it.
I don't want it.
I pick up the rice ball with my fingers and put it in his face. Say ah. Stubbornly, he says,
No, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of being right.
Durrell hoots with laughter.
I'm jealous of you, Kavinsky. I wish I had a girl to feed me my lunch. Lara Jean, if he doesn't take it, I will.
He leans forward and opens his mouth for me. Peter shoves him to the side and says, "Step off, it's mine."
He opens his mouth and I pop it in like he's a seal at SeaWorld. With his mouth full of rice and his eyes closed, he says, "Yum, yum, yum."
I smile because it's so cute. And for a second, just for a second, I forget. I forget that this isn't real.
Peter swallows the food in his mouth and says, "What's wrong? Why do you look sad?"
"I'm not sad. I'm hungry because you guys ate my lunch."
I cross my eyes at him to show him I'm joking. Immediately, Peter pushes out his chair and stands up.
"I'm gonna get you a sandwich."
I grab his sleeve.
"Don't, I'm just kidding."
"Are you sure?" I nod and he sits back down.
"If you're hungry later, we can stop somewhere on the way home."
"About that," I say. "My car's fixed now, so I won't be needing you to give me rides anymore."
"Oh, really?"
Peter leans back in his chair.
"I don't mind picking you up, though. I know you hate to drive."
"The only way I'll get better is if I practice," I say, feeling like Margot.
Margot the Good.
"Besides, now you'll get back your extra 5 minutes of sleep." Peter grins.
"True."
Chapter 47. Virtual Sunday night dinner was an idea I thought up. I've got my laptop propped up on a stack of books in the center of the table. Daddy and Kitty and I are all sitting in front of it with our slices of pizza. It's our lunchtime and Margot's dinner time. Margot's sitting at her desk with a salad. She's already in her flannel PJs.
"You guys are eating pizza again?"
Margot gives me and Daddy a disapproving look.
"Kitty's going to stay tiny if you don't feed her any green food."
"Relax, Gogo, there's peppers on this pizza," I say, holding up my slice, and everybody laughs.
"There'll be a spinach salad with dinner tonight," Daddy offers.
"Can you make my spinach portion a green juice instead?" Kitty asks. "That's the healthiest way to eat spinach."
"How do you know that?" Margot asks.
"From Peter."
The pizza slice that was halfway to my mouth freezes in midair.
"Peter who?"
"Lara Jean's boyfriend."
"Wait a minute.
Lara Jean's dating who?"
On the computer screen, Margot's eyes are huge and incredulous.
"Peter Kavinsky," Kitty chirps.
I whip my head around and give her a dirty look. With my eyes, I say, "Thanks for spilling the beans, Kitty." With her eyes, she says, "What? You should have told her yourself ages ago." Margot looks from Kitty to me.
"What in the world? How did that happen?"
Lamely, I say, "It just sort of happened."
"Are you serious? Why would you ever be interested in someone like Peter Kavinsky? He's such a..."
Margot shakes her head in disbelief.
"I mean, did you know Josh caught him cheating on a test once?"
"Peter cheats at school?"
Daddy repeats, alarmed. I quickly look at him and say,
"Once in seventh grade. Seventh grade doesn't even count anymore. It's so long ago. And it wasn't a test. It was a quiz."
"I definitely don't think he's a good guy for you. All of those lacrosse guys are so douchey."
"Well, Peter's not like those other guys."
I don't understand why Margot can't just be happy for me. I was at least pretend happy for her when she started dating Josh. She could pretend to be happy for me, too. And it makes me mad the way she's saying all of this stuff in front of Daddy and Kitty.
"If you talk to him, if you just give him a chance, you'll see, Margot."
I don't know why I'm bothering trying to convince her of Peter when it will be over soon anyway. But I want her to know that he is a good guy, because he is.
Margot makes a face like, "Yeah, okay, sure." And I know she doesn't believe me.
"What about Genevieve?"
"They broke up months ago."
Daddy looks confused and says,
"Peter and Genevieve were an item?"
"Never mind, Daddy," I say.
Margot is quiet, chewing on her salad, so I think she's done, but then she says,
"He's not very smart, though, is he? I mean, at school?"
"Not everyone can be a National Merit Scholar.
And there are different kinds of intelligence, you know. He has a high emotional IQ.
Margot's disapproval makes me feel prickly all over. More than prickly. Mad.
What right does she have to weigh in when she doesn't even live here anymore? Kitty has more of a right than she does.
Kitty, do you like Peter? I ask her. I know she'll say yes.
Kitty perks up, and I can tell she's pleased to be included in the big girl talk.
Yes.
Surprised, Margot says, Kitty, you've hung out with him too?
Sure, he comes over all the time. He gives us rides.
In his two-seater? Margot shoots a look at me.
Kitty pipes up.
No, in his mom's van.
With innocent eyes, she says,
I want to go for a ride in his convertible. I've never been in a convertible.
So he doesn't drive around his Audi anymore? Margot asks me.
Not when Kitty's riding with us, I say.
Hmm, is all Margot says, and the skeptical look on her face makes me want to X her right off the screen. Chapter 48. After school, I get a text from Josh. You, me, and the diner like old times. Except old times would have included Margot. Now it's new times, I suppose. Maybe that's not altogether a bad thing. New can be good.
Okay, but I'm getting my own grilled cheese because you always hog more than your fair share.
Deal.
We're sitting in our booth by the jukebox. I wonder what Margot's doing right now. It's nighttime in Scotland. Maybe she's getting ready to go out to the pub with her hallmates. Margot says pubs are really big over there. They have what they call pub crawls, where they go from pub to pub and drink and drink. Margot's not some big drinker. I've never even seen her drunk. I hope she's learned how to by now. I hold my hand out for quarters. Another Lara Jean and Josh tradition. Josh always gives me quarters for the jukebox. It's because he keeps mounds of them in his car for the toll booth. And I never have quarters because I hate change. I can't decide if I want doo-wop or folksy guitar, but then at the last second I put in Video Killed the Radio Star for Margot. So in a way, it's like she is here. Josh smiles when it comes on.
I knew you'd pick that.
No, you didn't, because I didn't know I was going to until I did. I pick up my menu and study it like I haven't seen it a million times. Josh is still smiling.
Why bother looking at the menu when we already know what you're going to get?
I could change my mind at the last second, I say. There's a chance I could order a tuna melt, or a turkey burger, or a chef salad. I can be adventurous too, you know.
Sure,
Josh agrees, and I know he's just humoring me. The server comes over to take our order, and Josh says,
I'll have a grilled cheese and a tomato soup and a chocolate milkshake.
He looks at me expectantly. There's a smile coming up on the corners of his lips. I scan the menu as fast as I can, but I don't actually want a tuna melt or a turkey burger or a chef salad. I give up. I like what I like. A grilled cheese, please, and a black cherry soda. As soon as the server is gone, I say, don't say a word.
Oh, I wasn't going to.
And then, because there's a silence, we both speak at the same time. I say, have you talked to Margot lately? And he says,
how are things going with Kavinsky?
Josh's easy smile fades and he looks away.
Yeah, we chat online sometimes. I think she's kind of homesick.
I give him a funny look. I just talked to her last night, and she didn't seem homesick at all. She seemed like the same old Margot. She was telling us about Raisin Weekend. It makes me want to go to St. Andrews, too.
What's Raisin Weekend?
I'm not 100% sure. It sounds like it was a mix between drinking a lot and Latin. I guess it's a Scottish thing.
Would you do that? Josh asks. Would you go somewhere far away?
I sigh. No, probably not. That's Margot, not me. It'd be nice to visit, though. Maybe my dad will let me go during spring break.
I think she'd like that a lot. I guess our Paris trip isn't happening anymore, huh?
He laughs awkwardly, and then he clears his throat.
So, wait, how are things going with Kavinsky?
Before I can answer, the server comes back with our food.
Josh pushes the bowl of soup so it's in the middle of the table.
First sip? He asks, holding up the milkshake.
Eagerly, I nod and lean across the table. Josh holds the glass and I take a long sip.
Ah, I say, sitting back down.
That was a pretty big sip, he says. How come you never get your own?
Why should I when I know you'll share?
I break off a piece of grilled cheese and dip it into the soup.
So you were saying, Josh prods.
When I stare at him blankly, he says,
you were about to talk about Kavinsky.
I was hoping this wouldn't come up. I'm not in the mood to tell more lies to Josh.
Things are good.
Because Josh is looking at me like he's expecting something more, I add,
he's really sweet.
Josh snorts.
He's not what you'd think. People are so quick to judge him, but he's different.
I'm surprised to find I'm telling the truth. Peter isn't what you'd think. He is cocky, and he can be obnoxious, and he's always late, true, but there are other good and surprising things about him, too. He's not what you think.
Josh gives me a dubious look. Then he dunks half his sandwich into the soup and says, you already said that.
That's because it's true.
He shrugs at this like he doesn't believe me, so I say, you should see the way Kitty acts around Peter. She's crazy about him.
I don't realize it until the words are actually out of my mouth, but I say it to hurt him. Josh tears off a hunk of grilled cheese.
Well, I hope she doesn't get too attached.
Even though I've had that exact same thought for different reasons, it still hurts to hear. Suddenly, the easy Josh and Lara Jean feeling is lost. Josh is withdrawn and closed off, and I'm stinging from what he said about Peter. And it feels like play-acting to sit across from each other and pretend it's the same as the old days. How could it be, when Margot isn't here? She's the point of our little triangle.
Hey, Josh says suddenly. I look up. I didn't mean that. That was a shitty thing to say.
He ducks his head.
I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm just jealous. I'm not used to sharing the song girls.
I go soft inside. Now that he's said this nice thing, I'm feeling warm and generous toward him again. I don't say what I'm thinking, which is, you may not be used to sharing us, but we're very used to sharing you.
You know Kitty still loves you best, I say, which makes him smile.
I mean, I did teach her how to hawk a loogie, Josh says.
You don't forget the person who teaches you something like that.
He takes a long sip of his milkshake.
Hey, they're doing a Lord of the Rings marathon at the Best this weekend. Wanna go?
That's like 9 hours.
Yeah, 9 hours of awesome.
True, I agree. I wanna go. I just have to check with Peter first. He said something about going to a movie this weekend, and Josh cuts me off before I can finish.
It's fine. I can just go with Mike. Or maybe I'll take Kitty. It's about time I introduced her to the genius that is Tolkien.
I'm quiet. Are Kitty and I interchangeable in his mind? Are Margot and I? We're sharing a waffle when Genevieve walks into the diner with a little kid who I guess must be her little brother. Not her actual little brother. Jen is an only child. She's the president of this Little Sib program. It's where a high school student is paired up with an elementary school kid, and you tutor them and take them out for fun days. I slump down in my seat, but of course Jen still sees me. She looks from me to Josh, and then she gives me a little wave. I don't know what to do, so I just wave back. Something about the way she's smiling at me is unsettling. It's how genuinely happy she looks. If Genevieve is happy, that's not good for me. At dinner, I get a text from Peter. It says,
if you're going to hang out with Sanderson, can you at least not do it in public?
Under the table, I read it over and over. Could it be that Peter's the teensiest bit jealous? Or is he really just worried about how it looks to Genevieve?
What do you keep looking at? Kitty wants to know.
I put my phone down, face down. Nothing. Kitty turns to Daddy and says, I bet it was a text from Peter. Buttering a roll, my dad says, I like Peter.
You do?
I say. Daddy nods.
He's a good kid. He's really taken with you, Lara Jean.
Taken with me? I repeat.
To me, Kitty says,
You sound like a parrot.
To Daddy, she says,
What does that mean, taken by her?
It means he's charmed by her, Daddy explains. He's smitten.
Well, what's smitten?
He chuckles and stuffs the roll in Kitty's open, perplexed mouth. It means he likes her.
He definitely likes her, Kitty agrees, her mouth full. He looks at you a lot, Lara Jean. When you're not paying attention, he looks at you to see if you're having a good time.
He does? My chest feels warm and glowy, and I can feel myself start to smile. I'm just so happy to see you happy. I used to worry about Margot taking on so many responsibilities at home and helping out the way she did. I didn't want her to miss out on her high school experience. But you know Margot. She's so driven.
Daddy reaches over and squeezes my shoulder.
To see you now going out and doing things and making new friends, it makes your old man very happy. Very, very happy.
I feel a lump grow in my throat. If only it wasn't all a lie.
Don't cry, Daddy, Kitty orders, and Daddy nods and pulls her into his arms for a hug.
Can you do me a favor, Kitty? He says.
What?
Can you stay this age forever?
Automatically, Kitty replies.
I can if you give me a puppy.
My dad roars with laughter, and Kitty laughs too. I really admire my little sister sometimes. She knows exactly what she wants, and she'll do whatever it takes to get it. She's shameless that way. I'm going to talk to Daddy and help her cause. The two of us will wear him down. There'll be a puppy under our tree Christmas morning. I'd bet money on it. Chapter 49. The next night, Peter and I study at Starbucks for a few hours. Well, I study, and he keeps getting up and talking to people from school. On the way home, he asks,
Did you sign up for the ski trip?
No, I'm a terrible skier. Only cool people like Peter and his friends go on the ski trip. I could try to twist Chris's arm into going, but she'd probably laugh in my face. She's not going on any school trip.
You don't have to ski. You can snowboard. That's what I'm doing.
I give him a look. Can you picture me snowboarding?
I'll teach you. Come on. It'll be fun.
Peter grabs my hand and says, Please, 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 Lara Jean, come on. Be a sport. It'll be fun, I promise. He catches me by surprise with this. The ski trip isn't until winter break. So he wants to keep this, us, up until then? For some reason, I feel relieved.
If you don't want to snowboard, he continues, the lodge has a big stone fireplace and big comfy chairs. You can sit and read for hours. And they sell the best hot chocolate. I'll buy you one.
He squeezes my hand. My heart does a little zing, and I say, All right, I'll go.
But the hot chocolate had better be as good as you say. I'll buy you as many as you want.
Then you better bring a lot of singles, I say, and Peter snorts.
What?
Nothing.
When we get to my house, I climb out and he drives away. Before it occurs to me, I left my bag on the floor of his car, and Daddy and Kitty aren't home. They're at Kitty's school for parent-teacher conferences. I fumble around blindly under the deck, feeling around in the dark for the spare keys we keep hidden under the wheelbarrow. Then I remember that the spare keys are in the junk drawer in the house because I forgot to put them back the last time I got locked out. I have no keys, no phone, no way of getting into the house. Josh has a spare key. He's watered my dad's plants for him a few times when we went away on vacation. I find a rock in the driveway and I cross the lawn and stand underneath Josh's window. I throw the rock at it and I miss. I find another one and it pings off the glass, barely making a sound. I try again with a bigger rock. This one hits. Josh opens the window and leans his head out.
Hey, did Kavinsky leave already?
Surprised, I say, Yeah, I left my bag in his car. Can you throw down the spare keys? Josh sighs like I'm asking for something huge.
Hold on.
Then he disappears. I stand there and wait for him to come back to the window, but he doesn't. He comes outside the front door instead.
He's wearing a hoodie and sweatpants. It's Margot's favorite hoodie. When they first got together, she used to wear it all the time, like it was a letterman's jacket or something. I hold my hand out for the